The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in a very, very, very unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and I'd like to introduce for you our panel today. To my left, from the Department of Economics, it's Professor Mike DiGiovanni. We're very glad to have you, Mike. How have these first third of the term treated you so far?
It's been good. I got a smart class, and they're making me look good.
Oh, that's good.
Well, I'm sure now, in particular, economics is certainly at the forefront of, you know, everyone's mind. So
I just want to know where those students are coming from. I want a few of them.
That's right. Me too.
To Mike's left, from the Department of Communication Studies, it's Professor Jason Roach.
How you doing, Matt? It's good to be back.
Glad to have you, man.
We can't see you wave on the radio. Just saying.
We can't see you do all sorts of things when we're on the radio.
What? He's not wearing pants? What? Oh, I'm kidding.
It's like Matt's kids. Dad, look at the puzzle I'm doing, right? I can't see it through the phone.
That is the voice, of course, of Professor Beth Oljar of philosophy directly across the table from me.
Being bad and making fun of Matt's children. I'm sorry. Great to be here.
They do. Kids really do say the darndest things. It's not just a TV show, I swear. Let's see. Proper three-dimensional orientation. To Beth's left, from the College of Creative Studies in Detroit, Michigan, it's Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always. We're back.
Yes, we are back.
Oh, what mayhem. What glorious mayhem.
And we're glad to have Michael Jason back.
Yes, we're definitely glad to have Michael back.
Yes, Michael, we're very glad to have you back.
Because we missed you.
Yes, we did. Absolutely. I think a lot of people at the university. Maybe even our next professor, Professor Chuck Hockett from the AV and IT department at UDM.
Hi there. It's my first time here, so I don't know what to expect.
Well,
we missed two of us.
Lots of laughing.
You're only a virgin once.
This is my, you know, several hundredth time here, and I still don't know what to expect. Matter of fact, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our T-shirt prizes, and if you don't stump the panel, you win one of our T-shirt prizes. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/ATP. You can just submit your questions HTML. You can fax the professor at 313-993-1144. Or you can send the questions USPS, do people still do that, at least as of 2010, to Michael Jason, College of Liberal Arts and Education, University of Detroit Mercy, 4001 West McNichols Road, Detroit, Michigan, 48221-3038. And the last time we were in the hallowed halls of the Briggs Building, we were finishing up a set of questions from Anonymous. And Anonymous had favored us with a set of questions that were all over the place. So here
Which
we go.
We love.
What do we need to win this one? We
had that is a very good question. And asking me to do math late on a Friday is a little unfair. But I believe we were doing quite well. And a matter of fact, we hadn't got more than two wrong out of these 20 questions, and I believe 70% is passing.
Oh, good.
And without Professor Boats here, we'll do the math retro. Who were the first two cartoon characters to receive a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse is definitely one of them.
About Homer Simpson.
Ooh, that's a good one.
He certainly should have his own.
And I believe the Simpsons as a group have a star. But these were the first two cartoon characters.
Donald Duck.
Not
Fred
Donald.
Flintstone. Bugs Bunny.
Bugs Bunny. We gotta be friends to all big studios here. So we'll, you know, Mouse House and WB, and we'll keep them both happy. Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. Okay.
There's no years here, but I'm just going to go out on a limb and say probably 40s, 50s, 60s. I'm guessing it was a while ago.
Yep. Mickey could have been in the 30s,
yeah,
right? Didn't
That's
he make
possible.
His appearance in
Steamboat Willie?
Yeah,
it was still unclear to me how Mickey's rise to fame, you know, how long it took. What is the only South American country to touch both the Pacific and the Atlantic Oceans? What a great question.
It's got to be the one at the bottom. What is that?
Argentina?
Chile?
Interestingly, what's listed here is
Isn't
Colombia.
Isn't that the one at the bottom?
Oh, Colombia.
And so, you know, are we talking about the Antarctic Ocean if we go that far south would be my question. I'm not sure how far Chile and Argentina extend, so.
Wait, what's the answer?
Colombia is actually bridged. It's a bridge for Mesoamerica, right? So it's on the Atlantic and the Pacific sides.
Okay.
But I think Argentina, you know, let's pretend like we're grading here. Partial credit.
I'm so directionally challenged anyway. You know, shouldn't trust me on anything to do. You know, it's amazing that I actually even make it home from the university. I'm not kidding
you. The breadcrumbs you leave, right?
Yeah.
Except the squirrels eat them all. The breadcrumbs would be great, but the squirrels eat them all.
You know what we have?
The trail of squirrels that get hit by the car.
That's right. All the trails.
The roadkill.
Yeah. When we have these issues for our newcomers here, you know, with math and geography, it's always good to jump right back into a pop culture. So what TV show featured a, quote, Model B9 Class M3 General Utility Non-Theorizing Environmental Control Robot? Unquote.
TV show
with a
yes.
robot. I got to think of the one with Will Smith. Lost in Space.
Lost in Space is exactly nice. Correct. That's absolutely. The robot was played by an actor named Bob May, but voiced by Dick
danger,
Tufeld.
Danger.
Exactly. Flailing arms, right? Oh, this is classic. I'll tell you right now, I heard only semi-recently that this question is on the U.S. Citizenship exam. Uh-oh. So that's going to be tricky.
George Washington. Oh, I should hear that.
There's only one U.S. state that has a unicameral legislature.
Nebraska.
Nebraska, that is right. And this former, you know, who was not a citizen, now is like, can you help me with this? And I'm like, I can't help you with this. I have no idea. The story is that Nebraska is the first and only, and the only other state that's come close is Michigan. It's multiple times it's been on the
really?
Ballot. Abolish the Senate, abolish the House, make it
just
all one unit, and then not worry about anything anymore.
Could we do that for the whole country?
Well, we could do that too, you know?
How does that mean we wouldn't have to worry about anything?
Except it's kind of a good thing that one of the houses of Congress is determined by population,
right.
and representation in the other is not.
Of course, yeah. Of course. Yeah. Federally, that might be hard to push through, but I think it works for Nebraska. So
I mean, New York and California would love it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Which Major League Baseball player is the only one to win the batting title in three different decades? Sheesh. That's rough.
Three different decades.
Yeah, take some special talent.
Ty Cobb?
Not Ty Cobb.
The American League?
Ted Williams?
I think we're thinking American League. I want to say the Royals.
George Brett.
Dude,
Three different
decades.
Wow, I didn't know
that. Long.
And without steroids, yeah. I mean.
That's amazing.
That we know
that's
of.
Even more impressive.
Yeah, Pinewood. Pinewood.
People who can actually commit great, wonderful things in baseball, pre-steroids, I mean, they're just so far up on my level of respect now, it's not even funny. Who was the last of the Marx Brothers to pass away? Oh, bonus points for the year, too.
Oh, man.
Groucho?
Groucho was up there.
He was up there.
Wasn't Groucho.
He has one TV show there for a while, too.
Mm-hmm.
Zeppo?
I'm sorry?
Zeppo?
It was Zeppo.
Okay.
Can you hit the year?
I have no
clue. When did Groucho pass? He passed in like the late 70s, wasn't it? So
you might be confusing this with Zeppo, who died in
1979. Okay, maybe then.
There you go. Late, that's about as late the 70s can get.
Yeah.
That's 1980 itself.
Which one was Zeppo? The one with the hat?
Very well done. Aside from the
Led Zeppelin.
Vague geography question.
He's one of the generic Marx Brothers.
Okay, we have a set of questions here from John Winter. Received 15th of September. He's saying 8 out of 10 to pass. That's way more stringent than my grading scale, I can tell you that. And they are music trivia questions.
Yeah.
So we have a theme.
Oh, Lord.
We have a theme.
Well, as long as it's not classical music, in which case I know nothing.
Well, this first question will kick us off in the right direction. It's not classical, but what song, according to the people who keep track of such things, has the longest title and who wrote it?
Wow.
I am not certain we have enough brain power in the room to pull this one off,
holy
with
mackerel.
All due respect to
Does
professors.
This mean a top 40 song that hit the charts that has the
it
longest
may
title?
It may have. I wasn't alive in 1943, so that's going to be a push. Yeah, we're talking pre-World War II.
Well, that's not... That's
Big Band.
Or
ish.
Big Band.
Ish.
Big Band.
Yeah.
Big Band.
I'm thinking it's
probably
you would mean Google Boy, possibly. Maybe I don't know.
That's the right
era.
Yeah, it's the right era.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Something by Glenn Miller. Or,
It's Hoagie Carmichael was the person.
I Get Along Without You very well.
Good guess. Very good guess. However, the correct response is. Please wait until I'm done. I'm a cranky old Yank in a clanky old tank on the streets of Yokohama with my Honolulu mama doing those Beto Beto flat on my Cito Hirohito blues.
I was just going to say that.
Sorry
that I cut you guys off.
At least I came up with one Hokie Carmichael.
Yeah, you did. That was really good. That was really good.
Right.
Oh, man. Wow. I'm putting that on my next exam. That'll be funny. Let's see how
the spelling
people
counts.
Weren't alive in 1992 handle it.
Yeah, there's got to be a mnemonic to remembering all that.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably.
Exactly. Which famous composer was also known as the Red Priest?
Red Priest.
He was ordained as a priest in 1703. Very interesting.
Red. That's
yes.
Suggests Russian. So is it
Wagner?
You know,
or is it red?
Don't you feel the seasons changing outside, ladies and gentlemen?
Fall seasons.
Vivaldi.
Vivaldi. Oh. Yeah.
Four seasons. Was that the clue
that
I was supposed
four
to
seasons. And Vivaldi actually had red hair.
Very good.
And shot red hair.
Very
so
good.
Instead of like the Mad Priest or anything like that, he was the Red Priest.
Wow. That's actually. One of the Vivaldi's Four Seasons is one of the pieces of classical music I actually not only like but own on CD, which is probably why. Yeah.
See, after we prefaced it by saying what's going on with the classical, we came right back to where we needed to be.
Nice.
Where did John Williams get part of the theme from Star Wars? I'm not quite sure if this ends up being. I'm not sure if this ends up being more on the side of urban legend, but it is kind of a cute story. Where did John Williams get part of the theme from Star Wars? Because speaking of classical...
Superman?
I'm thinking... actually, Superman came after Star Wars. I want to say
Rocky,
that was 79.
Yes. He did Rocky.
Yeah, he did Rocky.
But Williams was a big fan of classical music, and if you piece together all of the main theme of Star Wars, it's just stolen from everywhere. Holtz's Mars, the Bringer of War, all the like classical pieces, it's basically just completely plagiarized, and he's happy about it because it's like...
It's
homage.
I thought it was the Bill Murray cover version of the Star Wars song from
Very
Saturday
funny.
Live. That's
Very funny. Yes. The lounge singer.
That's right.
One of my favorite sketches.
I have no idea where he got it.
The William Tell Overture, maybe?
Part of the theme from Star Wars is Born Free, played upside down. This is what it says.
Wow.
Born Free. I'm not going to sing too much on this show. It won't scare anybody away.
Wow.
Okay.
Pretty weird.
How do you know what it sounds like upside down?
Upside down.
I think that playing something backwards would make more sense. Upside down, it's like, wow.
What? It's called a B-side, isn't it?
I just thought it was the Beatles that did that and all their songs backwards said Paul is dead.
Oh my
God,
that's right. And who was it? Russ Gibb, right? The DJ around here.
WKNR.
Yep. Keener
13.
Keener 13. What was Charlie Pride before he became a country music artist?
Auto mechanic.
Well, he was a soul singer, right? A soul and a gospel singer before he...
It could have been. That's not what it has here. He actually had a profession. And you know what? It was a non-musical. It was a sporting profession.
Pitcher.
He was a pitcher. He was a baseball pitcher.
There we
Absolutely.
Go.
Must be that Chuck connection.
Who did he play for?
You make it grade school. We connect.
That's it. Yeah, apparently he was a professional baseball pitcher before becoming a country music artist.
That's awesome.
What is the minimum... someone just mentioned big bands, too. And what is the minimum number of musicians a band must have to be considered a big band?
12?
Big people?
It's got to be more than that, right?
I don't know. I mean,
20.
Ooh, we're going to have to consider that one over our break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
That was good for the self-esteem.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Our next set of questions comes from Keith Hedrick. Of California. Orange, California.
California, yes.
Yes, how about that? And he says, I have enclosed 10 quotes. You need to figure out who said it. Yeah, right.
Keep hoping.
We'll take it, love.
You were working on your taxes, weren't you?
You need 6 out of 10 correct in order to win. Okay.
6? This guy has low standards.
He's serious.
That's good.
That's why he writes to us.
He's a realist.
Who said? I have taken more out of alcohol than alcohol has taken out of me.
Noel Coward.
No, it's British.
Oh.
But it's a statesman.
Churchill.
Yes.
Churchill.
Okay. That's right.
Churchill was at a party one night and this woman came up to him. You know that
story? But tell
her.
Yeah. Please say.
Tell
her.
Oh, and she was being obnoxious and she said, you know, Mr. Churchill, you're drunk. And he said, yes, madam, that's true, and you're ugly. But in the morning, I shall be sober, and you will still be unclean.
This wasn't Queen Elizabeth, was it?
he didn't know who it was.
And we are back with some music questions from John Winter. And we were in the middle of our last question. What is the minimum number of musicians a band needs to be considered a big band? How big is big?
15.
18.
Smaller.
8.
14.
Higher. Thank God this is the Price is Right. 10.
Apparently all you need is 10. We'll be done with.
Okay. All you need is 10.
Where's Plinko?
Baker's dozen is 13.
Okay. Right.
That was closest.
I believe the days of the big band are over, but apparently all you need is yourself and 9 good buddies.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean... Just having 10 people, what if they all play cello? I mean, that's kind of weird, right? I mean, it's got to be a mixture.
In the marching band.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
It'd be a big band with big instruments.
We've got another echo to someone's job before they became famous in music. Before achieving success as a singer, Luciano Pavarotti was in what career? It wasn't baseball pitcher, just to get that out of the way.
I always thought he looked like a chef.
Yeah. He wasn't a chef.
His Paul Prudhomme stand-in.
That's a good guess, actually.
He wasn't a plumber. Was not a plumber.
Teacher?
He was an elementary school teacher. Oh, spot on.
That was a total guess.
Yep.
Jeez.
Yeah,
if
that's
I could
kind
do
of
that,
interesting.
I'd have him for myself.
What is it about professional baseball or elementary school teaching that drives people into such a crazy profession? We'll never know. Where did bluesman Ellis Bates get his stage name? Who was Ellis Bates, and how did he get his stage name?
Muddy Waters?
Howling Wolf?
No.
Okay, hold up.
You guys are along the right track here, though.
You gotta admit, blues singers do come up with the greatest names.
They do have very interesting names.
You hit the best one, Muddy Waters.
Yeah,
so
Bleeding Gums
one.
Murphy. Oh, what was the name again?
Ellis Bates.
Ellis Bates.
I want to say, just to keep everything tight in terms of the history in Detroit, that Ellis Bates would have played Baker's Keyboard Lounge at least a few times.
Wow.
Which is just a couple miles away from UDM.
Literally, up the street.
And they were filming Detroit 187 there yesterday. That's why Livernois was blocked off.
Right?
So yeah.
Ah, is that what happened? Because I saw these cops up there and I couldn't see an accident. And I was sort of, what is going on here?
Yep.
I see.
Hollywood has come to Michigan, for your listeners. And it's interesting.
Blues singers.
Any ideas? It was Bo Diddley.
Oh.
And a Bo Diddley was the name of apparently a one-string African instrument. And when he saw it, he decided to adopt it as his name. So unfortunately, it looks like, it's like our own students getting to, three quarters of the way through the exam and already knowing they failed. We've unfortunately answered three questions wrong here, so it's all downhill.
Oh.
How old was Felix Mendelssohn when he wrote the overture to A Midsummer Night's Dream? He was not old, professors.
14.
Being
Baker's
able
dozen.
To
Baker's
a little bit older. A little bit older.
Well, Mozart composed at 13, didn't he?
He was writing at a very young age.
Apparently Mendelssohn was 17.
I was like,
at that point he had already written a full opera and over a dozen symphonies.
Wow.
Making my getting to work 30 seconds late this morning look like a pile of crap. Come on, say that right now.
Can we say that on Esquire?
I think we can.
All right.
I think we can.
We'll find out soon.
It was Mendelssohn, you said?
Mendelssohn, yep. Felix Mendelssohn.
17.
Man, so horrible.
Wow.
Gee, I really wasn't thinking about composing classical music when I was 17.
Why not? I mean, we all did it. We just weren't good at it, Beth.
Just busy listening to Foreigner and Billy Squire. That's what was big when I was in high school, so...
What's the world's best-selling musical instrument? This one's able to be reasoned, I think, if you think about it.
It's got to be guitar or piano.
It isn't, either.
Recorder.
Drums. It's got to be some kind of drums.
No.
Congas?
Something a little more portable?
Well, that's why I thought recorders.
Saxophone.
Kazoo.
Flutes?
Portable.
Hold on, what instruments aren't portable?
Drums are...
My harpsichord.
Sometimes referred to as the mouth harp.
Oh,
harmonica.
Harmonica, yes. harmonica. I thank God the Science Channel still has that How It's Made show on. Yes. My 7-year-old loves it, and once they were showing how harmonicas are put together, and I'm like, this is crazy, you know? Guy in the back, you know, shaving down the reeds to tune them all by hand. This is insanity. It was very cool. And good insane. Good insane.
If that's
last
the most
question.
Popular instrument on Earth, he must get really sore from
let me tell you,
cutting down
let
all
let
those reeds.
Actually, what was interesting was the intro where they said this was not Hohner, which I believe is the main company that makes harmonicas, but a small company out of this guy's garage or what have you. And they usually don't show what they do because they're using these ancient techniques and they don't want to give them away to any of their competitors. And
wow.
Harmonicas that tune a certain way are better than others. Again, I believe this one can be reasoned through. Who is the first black artist to have a video on MTV?
Michael Jackson.
It was. Do you remember the video?
I got to go with Billie Jean.
Billie Jean.
Billie Jean.
That
right
was
on.
I remember that was
very,
my mother's,
very good.
My mother's favorite video.
Wow. Incredible.
Because she was sort of just enchanted with the whole notion
that
of... And it's
fun.
A great video. Yeah. I mean, it really... stands the test of time.
Every red-blooded Gen Xer should also know what was the first video that aired at all on MTV.
Video Killed the Radio Star.
That's right.
The
very good.
It was Pat Benatar, but I can't remember the song.
That's right.
You can narrow it
that's
down.
Treat me right, shall we?
I can't remember, but I just remember it was Pat Benatar. Because, you know, everyone gets the first one. So the second one, okay, it's Pat Benatar something. I'm useless today. Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, guess who's not useless? John Winter stumped us at the 50% level, so he's definitely getting a T-shirt. Of course, he would have either way, but that's okay, too. Thanks for your questions, John. We have 20 more questions from Anonymous, and, you know, Anonymous is a little better about grading 70%, so I think we should be able to handle this here. Let's see what we can do. It looks like, as always, Anonymous has favored us with stuff that's all over the map. Awesome. Mm. Who are the only four actors to have played in all 11 seasons of the television show MASH?
One's got to be Alan Alda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Loretta Swit.
You got it. That's number two.
The guy who played
Radar.
Klinger.
No, he left.
Jamie Farr.
Radar.
Jamie Farr is the third.
And the guy who played Radar.
No, no, he left.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, he went back to a tunnel.
You got it. You got it. You
the
can
priest.
Do it.
Father Mulcahy. William Christopher.
William Christopher is correct. Yeah, yeah. That's all four. Wow.
Very good.
No. Excellent teamwork.
He had a collar.
I'm looking for me.
Chuck's joking over here.
At any non-Catholic university, that wouldn't have been a good hit.
I'm frankly impressed by, you know, listening to people talk about TV. Usually they refer to actual people by their character names, and you guys were able to bridge that very well. So a little bit of back
and forth. But the
real
name
was Father
Mulcahy.
Yeah. Paul McGahee.
Hot Lips.
Hot Lips.
Mm-hmm. Houlihan.
Margaret Houlihan.
Klinger.
Klinger.
And his dresses. He wore dresses.
Yeah, that's right. You got it. That's it.
Max, that's right.
But what did Q stand for, though?
We'll have to check that out.
We'll get our crack research team working on it behind the glass here right now. At the annual Wife Carrying World Championship, what does one win for first prize?
Sore back.
Mentholatum rub. Oh, man.
Since most of us in the room are just finding out that this exists.
Dowry?
No. They're going to win.
Old school.
I believe we're already sort of at a point where there's a lot of gender stereotypes going on here. So what would every husband want after carrying their wife and winning this first prize? Probably to sit down and... I don't know.
We still want to stay married, man.
Oh, I forgot. No, they're actually going to receive some refreshment.
Yeah, I was going to think
beer.
Beer or shot in a beer.
Their wife's mass in beer. That's what it is. I mean, it's unclear whether it's in multiple containers for future use.
You got to finish it all at once.
A garbage can full of
large
boots.
Yeah, that's cool. These are very interesting because it immediately makes me want to just jump on Wikipedia and see what's out there about the Wife Carrying World Championship.
Where is it?
Seen that. I mean, I've seen video clips from that.
I guess I've never seen it before.
ESPN2 or something?
Or maybe just, ESPN4.
You know, Keith Olbermann, when he's looking for stuff for... For Oddball, he'll put on really sort of unusual sporting events. So,
all right.
Okay. I'm sure that's where I saw it.
I think this one, this next one is up Beth's alley here. Who was the first artist signed to the Beatles' Apple Records?
Oh, I know this one if you don't.
Other
Go
than
for
the
it.
Beatles.
Other than the Beatles?
Badfinger?
It wasn't Badfinger.
Oh,
it was a solo artist, a male. Very popular during the late 60s and 70s. Still popular.
Dylan?
Still
tours. Eric Clapton?
Dylan? No, not Dylan. Dylan. Not Dylan. Not Clapton.
Was he British?
Nope. Initials oh. JT.
JT. Late 60s.
James Taylor.
James Taylor.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Wow.
Very now, good. Were the Beatles part of their own record label, Beth?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't know if they were.
They recorded stuff on Apple.
Okay.
They did,
okay.
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
I think Abbey Road and Let It Be came out on Apple.
So they founded their own record company and then also
signed somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, then they had a lot of fights over who was going to manage it and how it was going to be run, and that was kind of the end of the Beatles.
Did we ever find out the answer to the albums that Ringo Starr didn't sing on?
Oh, yeah.
I thought we were going to look that up.
I'm still convinced Rubber Soul is one of them.
Okay. Next time, folks, next time.
There's no song on that on which he sings lead.
Hmm. Really? Who is the largest private landowner in New York City?
Columbia University.
They are number two.
Oh.
I wrote Rennet.
Oh, and we're not going to find out the answer till next week. Oh. We're going to have to say goodbye, Professor Hockett.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Professor Chow.
Pleasure as always, and, well, we tried.
Professor Oljar.
We did our best.
That's right. Professor Roach.
And good to be here, and very good to see Michael Jason, our producer,
yes,
back.
Absolutely.
Professor DiGiovanni.
Thanks for having me here, even though I contributed nothing.
You did good things.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
Indeed, that's right. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, in fact, the very chair of that department, Professor George Pickering.
Hey, pleasure to be here, as always.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
George, are you saved?
What makes you think that's any of your business?
You're good.
Now, see?
It's
telling you how the pros
there
handle
it. It paralyzes all powers of retort.
It does.
Do it.
That's
George.
Right. Bang. That's
how
it.
How to handle bad questions.
What a guy.
That's good.
And that voice you just heard, sitting to George's right, from the Department of History and the Assistant Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Directress, I guess that's the right word,
whoa,
isn't it? Or, well, the person who runs the Learning Center.
Top chick.
Yeah, top chick.
Top chick. There we go.
Professor Kathy Bush.
Hello, Edwin.
Hello, Kathy.
Tough chick, too.
Yeah, well.
No, but, you know, there is a story that reminded me of that exchange with Kathy. That Dwight L. Moody was a big revivalist.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Bible College.
Yeah. Late 19th century. And he did walk up to a person on the street and asked him if he was saved one time. And the man said, "It's none of your business." And he said, "Oh, yes, it is." And the man said to him, "You must be Dwight L. Moody."
That's good.
Oh, dear.
Super.
That's wonderful.
101 reasons to send questions to Ask the Professor. Reason number 12, instant fame. That's right. When your name is read on the air, thousands, no, hundreds of listeners across the country will hear it. How do I be famous, you may ask? Well, it's easy.
Send your questions to Ask the Professor, care of the Communication Studies Department at University of Detroit Mercy. 4001 West McNichols Road, Detroit, Michigan, 48221. Or email them to atp@udmercy.edu. We look forward to reading your questions on Ask the Professor.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies at the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and technically directed by Michael Jason. Glad to have you back, Michael. And our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo. Let's go, Red Wings!